my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey, friends. Welcome to episode 314 of the My 1-2-3 cents podcast. And this week, it is the interview. And full disclosure, we're recording this before Survivor Series, so if you want thoughts on Survivor Series, maybe go check out the My 1-2-3 cents Facebook page, Twitter, YouTube, all that good stuff. I also want to remind folks about the My 1-2-3 cents Stride Pro Wrestling action figure toy drive that is going on now. Obviously, big time changes in circumstances here in Illinois. We are not able to do a show in December, so there's not going to be anywhere to drop off. So if you contact me directly, I will either make arrangements to pick up from you or give you the shipping address if you are listening from outside the area. Or if you wanted to make a donation, write a check or Venmo, whatever the case may be, I will go out and buy those toys. I've had a couple people do that already this year. So all that being said, I am very happy and very pleased to have my interview subject this week on, and that is Shannon Young of Cape Championship Wrestling, CCW, of course, across the river in beautiful Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And I have a very long history in Cape Girardeau. And Shannon and I actually have a lot in common, too, I would like to think. And Shannon, thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a long time coming. You were the first show that I ever wanted to do that wasn't Podzilla 1985, and I always said you were the first show I wanted to do, and then that damn Lee Montgomery came and stole me away for the first show. But now I'm here. I'm finally on my 1-2-3 cents. Dalton and Asa got on here already.
Yeah,
but now you've got me. So
that's
thank
right.
you for having me.
Well, and let's kind of set the table here of sorts for folks who are listening and maybe not familiar with this area that we live in, but you mentioned good Lord, I can't say it tonight. Asa and Dalton together is Asa, apparently. You mentioned those two guys who you, for a very long time, hosted a podcast. You mentioned Podzilla 1985 and a whole podcasting network with many different podcasts. And that's actually how I first heard of you guys was Chad, of all people, out in L.A., was listening to a show out of Cape Girardeau, which is an hour away from me that I hadn't heard before. And so he introduced me to Podzilla 1985 and the shows that you're doing. So talk to me a little bit about the beginnings there of Podzilla 1985 and, of course, Pro Wrestling Unscripted.
Well, actually, I was just thinking about this right before we jumped on here and started talking, because we're creeping up on our sixth year of doing Podzilla 1985.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. It's gone downhill for years at this point, but that's the kind of humor you can expect when you listen to our show. But it's very closely tied to wrestling. Our first show was actually a WrestleMania preview show. So every year when WrestleMania rolls around, that's kind of our anniversary.
Okay.
And Podzilla 1985 was an idea that I had years upon years ago. I went to college for journalism. I was a sports journalist. I kind of had a falling out with the whole mainstream media and way before, you know, Donald Trump ran for president and fake news and all that. I had an issue with mainstream media, and I always wanted to do journalism. So I started a blog, and that went pretty well. But, you know, print is dead, as the great Egon Spengler once said. So we jumped the ship over to podcasting, which I had no interest in doing originally, but I had a couple of friends that told me that that was kind of the way of the future and that it would be good to do a podcast that I say interesting things and funny things. So Hunter Hendricks, who is a good friend of mine and used to host 93.9 over here in Cape Girardeau, Real Rock 99.3. I don't even remember the radio station at this point. It's been so long. But he had access to the radio station. We decided to go ahead and give the first podcast a try. It was a WrestleMania preview show. It was myself and him and a couple buddies. And it went so well that I wanted to do another one and another one. And eventually we were doing 2-3 shows a week of different things, you know, wrestling, the paranormal, video games, whatever. My good friend Jesse Kimball, who hosted a podcast called Penta Nerd, he ended up joining Podzilla 1985. We kind of merged together, and he brought his staff over. So at this point now, we do 4-5 shows a week covering just about everything. Again, you know, video games, politics, the paranormal. We even have a show now called Horse Time. I can't even tell you why we have a show called Horse Time, but it's our favorite show to do. And it actually lets me kind of stretch my feet or my legs a little bit. And, you know, I do a lot of scripted stuff and I write skits and sketches and stuff like that. And as a writer, that's good for me. But the flagship show for Podzilla 1985 for the longest time was Pro Wrestling Unscripted. And that was, it started with myself, Zach Price, and Hunter. And we've had quite a few different changes over the years. I think the one that most people are familiar with that listen to the show or that go to CCW would be the team of myself, Asa Gray, Dalton Anthony, and Ali Aber. But at this point, due to things and COVID and all that stuff, it's just Asa and Dalton at this point. Mm-hmm. And they do a fantastic job over there. Because I've kind of had a falling out with wrestling in the past couple of months. Other than CCW, I don't keep up with wrestling as much as I used to. I'm a very busy person, and I love professional wrestling, but I also hate wrestling sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever get that feeling.
Oh, yeah. I understand. Let's get the origin story then for your fandom, because if folks who do listen to Podzilla 1985 and Pro Wrestling Unscripted, I think you probably, I'm going to gather here that you were growing up kind of on the edge of the Hulkamania era of sorts,
yeah.
Back in those mid to late 80 days of WWF and NWA?
Oh, definitely. I'm an 80s kid, and I was born in 82, which is one of those things that when people say, oh, you're 38, you look fantastic for 38, I get angry. Like, what do you expect 38 to look
right,
like?
But anyway, right.
Anyway, yeah, I grew up in the Hogan era. That's still my all-time favorite era of professional wrestling. Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Roddy Piper, you know, the 80s guys. I'll always be an 80s. That's why I like Axe so much. Axe Allworth, yeah. Who is one of your guys.
Yeah.
I love Axe. He's like a kindred spirit of mine. But I started in that. My dad and I used to rent the old Coliseum videos from the local video store, and I'd watch them all the time. We eventually got one of those gigantic satellite dishes, and I started to watch Raw on USA when it switched over. I was there for the Monday Night Wars, and, you know, I've been a wrestling fan ever since. And I used to be really hardcore into it. I've kind of lessened it in the past couple of years. And I think most of that is because of Dalton.
Yeah.
Because I get tired of hearing Dalton talk about wrestling. I think if he wasn't always trying to show me stuff or make me watch stuff, I think I would like wrestling more. But Dalton kind of ruined it for me, as he does for most things.
That is true. That is true. So I find the story of you guys kind of getting involved with Cape Championship Wrestling a very interesting one, too, because, like you said, you started the podcast before CCW was even a thing, but
yeah.
Being there in the same town, the same community, it was, I guess they kind of lent themselves to each other, but you guys started off as just fans kind of hanging out at the CCW shows, is that right?
Yeah, the very first CCW show, so there was one at Comic-Con a couple years ago that I missed, and it wasn't officially CCW at that point, I forget what it was actually billed as, but the first official CCW show, when Ken Murphy and Jason Walls got involved, and Lee, and, you know, those guys, Jeff O'Dell and those guys, the very first show, one of my good friends, Osby Tomlin, who mm-hmm. I've been friends with forever, you know, Cult of Kayfabe champion, amazing wrestler, great guy. He was originally scheduled to wrestle on that show. And at the same time, my good friend Hunter Hendricks, Double H, was going to be their first guest general manager for the night. So they both kind of asked me to come to the show. I had never been to an indie show before. The only wrestling that I was really familiar with was WWF and WCW, some ECW, TNA, stuff like that. But they invited me to it, and I, on a whim, I decided to go. So it was myself, Tanner Calvert, and Allie. We went to the very first CCW show, and the first wrestler I ever fell in love with was Sarge O'Reilly. And when I saw Sarge O'Reilly, I was hooked. And then, of course, Billy Hills, who I did not get or appreciate that first show. The first time he came out with Sarah, I just went, oh, okay, I get it. Redneck, he's a bad guy.
Yeah. Cool.
Of course, Billy is a good friend of mine now, and Sarah, too, and I love both of them. But, yeah, we started out as fans. I told all my friends, you know, hey, this CCW show is amazing. It was a lot of fun. It's the most fun I've ever had at a wrestling show. So the next show, Asa and Dalton came. And even though some of us have missed certain shows, except me, I'm the only one. I think I'm the only person in CCW, fans, management, and otherwise, other than maybe Jason. I think Jason maybe even missed a show, maybe. But I've been to every show.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I've never missed a show. Whether I'm backstage or I'm out performing, whatever, I've never missed a show. But we started off as fans. We did front row every time. It got to a point where, you know, Big Lee would message me and say, hey, how many seats do you need for the front row? Because he knew we were going to be there. And when they started to do interviews on the big screen, and we were a natural choice for that. So Dalton and Asa started doing those interviews with wrestlers backstage, and we would play them during the shows. They got a TV deal eventually with KBSI, mm-hmm. and they needed a commentary team for it. And since we had done a couple of shows with them for the podcast and kind of invited some of their guys on and had interviewed them, they asked us if we wanted to do commentary. And absolutely, we did. That's been a dream of mine for a long, long time. You know, I grew up during the great commentary eras of Gorilla Monsoon, you know, Jesse Ventura, mm-hmm. Bobby the Brain Heenan, guys like that. So that's always been a dream of mine. And we did that. From there, we just got more and more involved with it. We started helping to record the show when Zach left and Mandy Kennedy and Allie took over recording. Me and Asa took over kind of writing the backstage segments, and we would do the interviews. Asa would interview them. Dalton would interview them. From there, they asked me if I wanted to be a ring announcer. I said, absolutely, sure. I've always wanted to do ring announcing. You know, I grew up Howard Finkel, one of the all-time greats, was a big inspiration for me. From ring announcing, Asa and Dalton started doing more with the production. Allie started doing more with the production. Eventually, Dalton became a wrestler, started training. They asked me if I wanted to work an angle with him. Absolutely, sure. It's always been a dream of mine to work in wrestling. Yeah. So we just kind of evolved from piece to piece to where we are now, which is, you know, kind of, I would say I'm maybe Jason's right-hand man, or at least I'm a finger somewhere, mm-hmm. to where if he needs something, I'm there and I help with whatever he needs help with. So, yeah, it's been a journey. When I think about how far we've come as a group and myself personally in the past, 4 years that CCW's been around, I've gone from fan to management in the span of 4 years. It kind of blows my mind. It's mm-hmm. one of those things that I don't even feel like I've earned it or deserve it. I still see myself as an outsider. So whenever I'm backstage hanging out with, you know, the big time wrestlers and the big names and we're just casually talking, I sometimes still stop and go, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah.
Why am I bothering this guy? You know, it's right. such a strange feeling.
So you guys really, other than just being wrestling fans, you had no connection with Jason or Big Lee or Ken Murphy at that point, right?
I knew Ken vaguely from, because I went to the Comic Cons that he put on every uh-huh. year, but Jason and Lee, I didn't know them at all.
That's awesome.
There was a time when, for whatever reason, I don't remember why, but Jason and Lee came to the store, Gaming Grounds, and Dalton and I, or maybe it was Ace and I, it's been so long now, I forget, but we were just hanging out, and we went to the store, and they were there, so we all met each other and talked, and we hung out for like an hour, and I thought they were cool guys, and I assume, thought we were cool guys, so it probably was Ace then, because if it was Dalton, I don't think they would have thought that. And by the way, for those of you listening, Dalton is loving this. Every time you say Dalton's name, he smiles. It doesn't matter if you're talking bad about him or not. Yeah. He just loves the attention. We didn't know Jason or Lee at all. And it's one of those things, we really earned our way through the ranks of CCW. And I'm very, very proud of everything that we've accomplished.
That's really cool. And I mean, you hear stories like that when, you know, Jim Cornette was young or Paulie Dangerously, you know, how they were taking photos, or, you know, they were fans first and then they kind of worked their way in. And you guys, you know, it was cool that there was a place that was kind of found for all of you, you know. But now, of course, with COVID and things are a little wonky, but, you know, once 2021 rolls around and everybody's back, you know, and hopefully able to operate and do shows the way that we were doing them in the past, Dalton's story is interesting to me, and like you said, Dalton's been on the podcast before, and so is Asa's, you know, Asa kind of being that voice of CCW with the commentary that he's done, and he's done some had some amazing colleagues behind the microphone, including Matt Stryker for Super Show.
Yeah.
But I want to know, because you were kind of that jack of all trades where you were doing the ring announcing, but then, and I remember I was at the show a couple years ago when Dalton, I believe it was Dalton's first match maybe, or one of his first matches, and you came out and we thought you were coming out to help him because, of course, everybody knows that you guys were, you know, the podcasting crew of Podzilla 1985, but then you turn on him.
Yeah,
and that crowd went insane. I remember the guy, I don't remember his name, but he went nuts, and I thought he was going to take that barricade down when you turned on Dalton like that. So that moment, number one, had to be very memorable because you want the crowd to react that way, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I'd never been a bad guy. I mean, I wasn't anything in wrestling. I guess you could say I was a good guy just because, you know, as a ring announcer, as you know, because mm-hmm. you've done it for a while and you're extremely good at it.
Thank you.
One of the best I've ever seen. You're usually friends with the fans. The fans like you because you're catering to them, you're promoting to them, you're selling to them. So I had never been on the other side where you wanted them to hate you.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how well I was going to do at it. I know I have a natural ability to get people to hate me. And that's actually how I became the bad guy in the first place. I don't know if I've ever told this story in public or how much people know, but there was a time period where one of the owners of CCW and I did not get along. We had a huge falling out. I won't name any names just for reasons. We've buried the hatchet now, by the way, if anybody's listening. As far as I know, we're friends. But we got into a big thing, and he was very, very popular with the CCW fans, and a lot of them turned on me, and not in a fun way, mm-hmm. like not in a heel way. It was very much a real life. They detested me. So Jason is always an opportunist, and he saw an opportunity to get me in there and get people to boo me. So that's when he asked me if I wanted to, you know, turn and work with Dalton, because I think he probably saw that me as the face ring announcer may not be working at that moment because so many people legitimately disliked me.
Gotcha.
So it was a natural fit. And that night when I turned, first off, I didn't know I was turning that night. We get there and I'm backstage, I'm doing ring announcing, and Jason just walks up to me and says, "Okay, Ken's going to take over for the rest of the show. You're going to turn on Dalton tonight." And I went, "Oh, cool. Let's do it." The crowd went nuts. I've never seen a reaction like that. And it blew my mind. I remember looking at Austin Lane and I just told him, I was like, "What do we do?" And he was just like, "Soak it in, make him hate you more." And I thought, I can do that. And it was a good ride, but it was kind of scary. I also thought there were a couple people in the audience that were actually going to try to fight me, which is probably not a great idea because despite how my character may be portrayed sometimes, I'm actually very large and intimidating in real life.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously then you're kind of set up in this feud with Dalton, and I believe, did you guys, because I was at Super Show, I believe that was the next time I came over there. Did you guys have a match that night? I remember somebody went through a table.
That was me.
Yeah, that was you. So was that an actual match that you guys had, or was that like the stipulation afterward that he had to beat someone to get to you? I can't remember now.
It was a six-man tag between the LA Hustlers and Justin Smart, who were part of House 100, versus Marco Stunt, Dalton Anthony, and other wrestler that I will choose not to say names.
Okay.
For what's happened with them in the public in the past couple of months, we'll say.
Oh, yes. Gotcha.
Yeah, one of those things.
Yes.
And the stipulation being that if Dalton's team won, Dalton got 5 minutes alone in the ring with me, which was terrifying because I've never wrestled.
Yeah,
I did backyard wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think everyone did. But to be told your first match is going to be at Super Show, which had a huge crowd, was terrifying. And I only got to train twice. We went to Tennessee over to the EIW wrestling arena, and I trained over there once with Justin Smart, Brandon Barbwire, and Austin Lane. And there was one other time I got to train with a couple of the rookies. That was the most training that I had, and then I had to go wrestle Dalton, which was fine because, you know, it was very basic kick, choke, and just try to get the crowd you know, angry at you, which I'm pretty good at. So I did that, but it ended up with me going through what was supposed to be a table, but it ended up being a door, which was funnier somehow.
Yeah.
And after the match, they took my shoes. Crowd went home happy. Everybody had a good time.
So when you did that, because, you know, we mentioned that you're feuding with Dalton, but you're feuding in the sense of you're the manager and you've got all your guys that are coming after him. So how does House of 100 come about? Tell me the backstory on that, because, you know, I think a big thing missing in today's wrestling environment is a good heel manager, and I feel like you were really kind of fitting that bill on the local scene.
It was one of those things when Jason asked me if I wanted to do the angle with Dalton, my first instinct was I almost said no, because I didn't want to step on Dalton's toes. Mm-hmm. Dalton had worked so hard at training and becoming a wrestler and being taken seriously that I didn't want to steal his thunder. And one thing that I know about myself is that if you put me in a situation where I'm going to perform, my natural instinct is to try to steal the show. That's just who I am. I'm with the podcast and with the story, I like to be front and center. That's just my personality. So I had to get approval from Dalton first. And of course, Dalton said, cool, it sounds great. But in reality, Dalton absolutely hated the idea. I found out later he despised it. He didn't want me anywhere near it, but he begrudgingly did it because, I don't know, maybe he thought he owed me or he didn't want to say no to Jason, whatever it was. But I was only supposed to work that angle with Dalton, and it was only supposed to be a month or two, and we were going to work towards something. It wasn't a long-term thing, but maybe Jason saw the reaction that I got that first night or whatever, and because the next thing I know is he asked me if I wanted a stable, which, again, I'm an 80s kid, so absolutely, sure. Bobby, the Heenan family, Jimmy Hart, of course, I'd love to be a manager. The first name he pitched to me for the stable, we had two ideas. My idea for the stable name, and I still like it, was the Age of Aggression. Because we were supposed to be we weren't supposed to be like, Jeff O'Dell had his group, the Pinnacle, which, a couple of Stride guys were a part of,
yeah.
Billy Hills, Roger Mathis. I wanted to do the Age of Aggression because I wanted this to be a more aggressive, violent, more real, like not chicken, heels.
Yeah.
Jason wanted to call us the 100 Club because my nickname on the podcast was Mr. 100, which I have always hated, by the way, because I took that nickname as a joke. We were making fun of somebody. That's not what I ever wanted to be known as, but I did. And Jason wanted to call us the 100 Club. And I thought, I don't know, maybe he was riffing on the 700 Club, but I thought, yeah, it was too close to Bullet Club and stuff like that. I didn't want, yeah, to do that. So we agreed on House 100, which I'm a big fan of Castlevania, and they were coming out with the anime, and they had House Belmont, so I thought, let's do House 100. He agreed to it. And he just kept giving me these amazing guys to work with. Such incredible talent he's trusting me with. Justin the Jew Smart, Damone Solovino was in there, Jake Durden, of all people, later Otis Crowley, the LA Hustlers, Dalton, Chris Slammer. I had these amazing guys that they gave me to work with, and I was like a kid in a candy store. I loved it. This was everything I always wanted from professional wrestling, and I loved that. I felt like I was a different kind of manager. I wasn't the usual manager. I was a big guy. I was bigger than most of the wrestlers.
Yeah.
So that kind of added a whole new layer to it, and I had a lot of fun with it. But Jason trusted me with it, and I thought we did some really, really good stuff, and I will always be thankful for that.
And you were actually then you were getting in there a little bit more, too, and actually wrestling as well. Is that right?
Yeah, I was actually, up until COVID happened, I was going to wrestle quite a bit this year. I had a match with Osby lined up for Super Show, but unfortunately that never happened because Osby's injuries, mm-hmm, caused him not to be able to wrestle anymore, which is incredibly sad, as his friend. See him go through that. And when 2021 rolls around, I will maybe wrestle? I honestly don't know, because, I always tell people a lot of guys get their start in professional wrestling in their late 30s. That's when they really hit, the rookie era. And everyone tells me, like, well, what about DDP? And I say, yeah, that one guy out of how many was successful in his late 30s when he started wrestling? Because I don't want to be, I told Jason, if I wrestle, I want to really wrestle. I want to train. I want to learn. I want to go out there and have good matches. I don't want to just be the kick and choke guy but I also don't have insurance and I don't want to get hurt.
Right.
So it's kind of a scary thing, but I would love to transition from manager into wrestler. I just came back as a good guy a couple of months ago at our last show, and big reaction, blew me away. I was humbled by it, and I thought to myself, man, if I could just learn to be a half decent wrestler with the personality that I have and the fan base that I have, I think I could really contribute to this. But who knows, you know, 2020 wrecked my life. We'll see if 2021 gives it back to me.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope that is the case. But you mentioned coming back and being that good guy and getting that reaction as well. What is more satisfying as a performer, you know, because I think that sometimes, you know, it's easy. Well, I don't want to say it's easy, but when you're a good guy, you know, you do the good things and people will cheer for you normally, even if it's a courtesy cheer. But I think for someone to really be despised and hated, that takes talent, I think, to get that crowd so invested in you that when you do that nefarious thing that they want to kill you. Like you said, you know, there's the people that are, you know, wanting to jump that guardrail and beat the crap out of you. So what for you was the most satisfying of those experiences? Because, you know, as the ring announcer, like you said, you're the host and everybody loves you and you're coming out and you're kind of setting the table for everyone. But when you're another performer, I feel like you kind of have to then step out of that comfort zone of being yourself, so to speak, and actually develop a character of sorts.
Well, the lucky thing for me is that a lot of people did already know me from the podcast, so they kind of already had, especially with the CCW fans, because quite a few of them, as I knew it, did listen to like Pro Wrestling Unscripted, so they already kind of had an investment in us. But if you were to ask me which one I was more satisfied with, up until this year, I would have told you the bad guy. Mm-hmm. It's fun being the bad guy. It's what I like about being the bad guy is I could go out and say things to people's faces and they didn't know whether or not I was performing or if I meant it.
Yeah.
So if it was somebody I truly disliked, and there are a couple of them, I could go out there and get in their face and say, you know, trash talk them, call them every name in the book, and they would, you know, be upset about it. But then in the back of the head, they're thinking, did he mean that? Mm-hmm. Or was that just his character? But this year, and it's hard being the bad guy, especially if you're really good at it, because if you're really good at being a bad guy, it is so easy to cross that line where people start to cheer you. A prime example of that, and I always talk to him about it because he and I kind of had a similar reaction with the crowd, was Billy Hills. Mm-hmm. Billy, he's so good at being the bad guy that eventually people started to cheer him. And I remember he came to me, you know, years ago before he and I had our little feud in CCW. And he told me, you know, when he was still a heel, he's like, I don't know what to do to get people to boo me anymore. Like, I come out, I trash talk, I throw things. And the more I do it, the more I get cheered. And he struggled with it. He struggled with trying to figure out how to get people to boo him again because he was so good at it. I kind of got the same thing towards the end, where when I would come out, there was a huge pocket of people that would cheer me, even though I wanted them to boo me. So it was a natural transition, I think, into good guy. And personally, I kind of needed it because this has been a very rough year for me, professionally and emotionally especially. So mm-hmm. to go out there and have people actually cheering me and clapping for me, it's selfish and it's shallow, but it meant a lot to me. That return when, you know, I come out, I don't know how people are going to react to me. I'd only been gone for about 2 months. I was supposed to be out longer, but, you know, situations kind of changed and they had to rush me back in. And I go out, I don't know how they're going to react. I don't know if they miss me. I don't know if they think I'm a good guy. But the moment I hit the stage, people are cheering, and that really boosted my confidence. I get up to the ring, and then I hear someone from the right yell out, "Welcome back, Shannon," and the crowd starts cheering. And I knew that I was in. I was in. I was a good guy. There was no worries at that point. And it just felt really good. I've always wanted to have that hero's welcome, but I never thought it would happen to me because I never thought I was good enough or important enough in professional wrestling to ever get that reaction. So to get that reaction and it be so organic meant the world to me. And I really needed that this year.
Yeah, that is very cool. And the other thing I kind of want to
ask you about is, you know, the fans and the reactions and whatnot. And you obviously live and work in Cape Girardeau, where CCW happens for the most part. Do you ever find in everyday life, you know, you're running into fans because you work at a video game store, so it would make sense that that crowd is also perhaps potential customers as well. Have you ever had any situations where you've kind of had to explain or you know, have a parent, you know, give you the side eye because you're this douchebag in the ring, but now you're trying to sell my kid a video game system?
Well, I've never had parents do that. And parents that I've, and that has happened quite a few times, no joke. we get a lot of crossover fans between, you know, Gaming Grounds and CCW. So I would very often have people come in with their kids and they would recognize me from wrestling and I would recognize them from the crowd. Most of the time, the parents are super cool about it and they know, so they're in on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they joke around with me. It's the kids that will give me the side eye.
Okay.
And, yeah, they don't want to shop there because, you know, I'm the bad guy. I did something terrible to Jackson Crowley, or I did something, you know, terrible to Billy Hills, and they don't trust me. So then, you know, it's an awkward situation because I love kayfabe and I don't want to destroy the illusion for this kid that I'm this terrible person. So I have to walk a really fine line. And I'm pretty good at it. It was never much of a problem. I still have fans that come in. I had one kid actually a couple weeks ago came in with his dad, and the kid loved me as a bad guy. And now that I turned good guy, when he came in, he didn't talk to me. He just walked around and looked and didn't say anything. And his dad explained to me, yeah, since you turned good guy, he doesn't like you anymore because he liked you better as the bad guy. So I had to pull the kid aside and tell him, like, hey, man, I'm still me. I'm still going to do the same things I did before. It's just now I'm doing them to Jeff O'Dell. So I'm not a good guy. I'm just not a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's strange place to be. But yeah, it's something that I deal with quite a bit. And even being out in public, just in general, more times than I can count, I've had people stop me and, you know, like get autographs and stuff, which just blows my mind. And I'm not always good at not being the same person on the stage as I am in public. Cause I'm a very, very, very private person in public. I don't go out and hang out. I don't party. I don't socialize. I stick to myself. I just recently started doing other podcasts. I didn't even do that before. This is my second podcast. That's not my own because I'm not good at socializing. But I've wanted to come on and do the show with you forever because, as everyone knows, Kevin Huntsberger is a personal hero of mine. you say we had a kind of a similar path, you know, journalism and stuff like that. The only difference is you did it first and you did it better.
Oh, thank you.
I'm always playing catch up to you.
Well, you're doing great things in CCW and with the podcasting. You know, you guys have great shows and great content, and I like that you have built that brand and that network of sorts where you've got different fan bases and people can come and listen to wrestling or listen to the video games or, you know, politics, pop culture, whatever the case may be. You guys have something for everyone. So again, check it out, Podzilla 1985. You guys are on Podbean, right? Is that the primary place to find you?
Yeah, Podbean, but we're on Spotify, we're on iTunes. You can pretty much find us anywhere. It's very easy to access. I hate Podbean, and they know that. And you know how they know I hate them? Because I've tagged them on Twitter and said, I hate you. I've told them that I don't appreciate their site because they just recently took away our ability to see the stats of, we used to be able to see how many listens we had on iTunes, how many listens we had on Spotify, stuff like that. And they took that away recently. So now we only get the stats from Podbean itself. And that was always, we have the least amount of listens on Podbean.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we're doing anymore. I've tried to quit the show numerous times. They won't let me. I've tried to end the show numerous times. They won't let me. I feel like I'm stuck in hell sometimes.
Well, I do think, and I love Asa and I love Dalton, but I do think that you kind of become that glue that holds the show together. Pro Wrestling Unscripted specifically, but
They're doing fine without me. No,
they're doing a great job. But you are. I just want you to know, you know, in all honesty, you are missed on that show. Just because I you know, you inject different insight, different personality, different, it gives it a different vibe and a different feel. And I know this year has been less than stellar for you personally, and you know, and in some cases professionally, with things going on with CCW and the state of the world, and the way that we are not able to do shows the way that we traditionally did them. But one thing that I've always found interesting with what you guys have done with Cape Championship Wrestling is the different and the varying amount of guests who have come in to wrestle or just be there as performers. And you've had some of those on the podcast, and you talked earlier about, you know, you're hanging out with these people backstage and don't feel like you belong, or, you know, you're wondering what's going on. And it is probably a pinch myself moment a lot of the times. Who are some of those that have really stood out to you, though, that you have either had that opportunity to meet and maybe pick up a thing or two from them and carry it on into what you guys are doing over there?
Well, you know, my favorite people that we've ever had, especially personally, some of them I've become from casual acquaintances to almost friends with, like Glacier. Glacier and I are casual acquaintances at this point, but I love the guy. He was so cool. Hernandez from, you know, LAX. He and I are actually semi-friends now, and he is just the coolest guy in the world. Probably my favorite that I got to work with personally, and he didn't actually work with us at CCW, but he was on the show, was Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up, yeah. I loved that interview, by the way.
That was a lot of fun. The bad part about that was literally the same week that my personal life fell apart and we lost a great member of the cast. So it's kind of a black cloud over it. But the interview that Ali and I did with Dolph was just so much fun because Dolph is such a down-to-earth guy. It's a joke, but I still have his phone number, and we text each other occasionally. Whenever I need to pull a card on Ace or Dalton, I'll say, well, let me see what Dolph thinks about this. Dolph was really, really cool. We had a lot in common. We both grew up with some of the same comedy. You know, he's a big comedian, and we talked comedy. We both love Mr. Show with Bob and David. There's a lot of stuff that he and I bonded over. Jeff Hardy was another one that I surprisingly bonded with. We had him on the show, and he was into some of the same music that I grew up with, Bone Thugs and Harmony, guys like that. You know, stuff like you never would expect to hear these guys, you know, to relate with. The absolute worst one that I've worked with, and the one that I, for whatever, I don't know if he was having a bad day, I don't know if he's just this way or what, but James Storm, I did not like James Storm. He was just kind of a diva, and every wrestler I've met in this business since I started with CCW and I've done Podzilla, they've all been super cool. James Storm is the only one that I remember thinking, well, this guy's kind of a dick. Tommy Dreamer was very, very serious, but he gave me some great advice. He was really cool. Hornswoggle was, me and him sat back there and talked about Muppets for hours. That was a lot of fun. A lot of these guys are just incredible, except James Storm.
Interesting. Yeah, I had a very brief meeting with him at a Stride show. He actually came in and was filling in for Brodus Clay, who, for whatever reason, couldn't come. This was a show in Pinckneyville. And like I said, I had a very quick, brief, you know, I interviewed him for the podcast for maybe 10 minutes. It was very short and sweet. He seemed very nice to me, at least at that point. But I have heard from others, and I don't know if they were folks that were at that CCW show or other events, that said that he could be difficult to work with and be around. So that's really cool, because I know, like, I was there at the Comic-Con when you guys were able to talk to Road Warrior Animal, who unfortunately we just very recently lost.
Yeah.
That had to be a really cool experience, too, because I think sometimes these guys come in and you're not exactly sure what their schedule is going to be like, how they're going to be, because they're traveling and whatever the case may be. But he seemed pretty down to earth, and you guys really, I felt like, handled him very well in terms of, you know, being able to talk to him. And, you know, I think sometimes it's hard to not fanboy, so to speak. But and even with Jeff Hardy, and again, I can't say enough about the Dolph Ziggler interview. You know, you handle yourself very professionally and are, you know, ready to go, and you do your homework and whatnot. So that's another mark of a great journalist, whether it's, you know, doing it on a podcast or on a TV news show or even writing a blog about it. You know, you have become, you know, just through the years that I've been listening to you, you've obviously improved greatly over time with those things. And again, that brand and that idea and that building off of it is something that will take you, I think, a long way.
It's one of those things where I think I hit, you know, no pun intended, I hit my stride a couple years ago. If you go back and listen to the first, you know, a couple of shows we did, the first, probably the first 6 months of Podzilla 1985, which I don't recommend anyone do. It's terrible. It was like the Wild West. We were throwing anything out there. We were just trying to entertain ourselves. And then for about 3.5 years, we hit this really great stride where we were putting on great shows. We were doing great interviews with people. And then COVID happened. And then, you know, my personal life took a hit. And I've kind of, I feel like I've almost reverted back to that. Well, I'm so casual now, I almost don't care. When we come in and do on the show, it's not that I don't care. It's just that I'm confident in myself now where I don't feel like I have to perform. I can just be myself, and people seem to still like it. And I always wanted to be like my heroes. I wanted to be like George Norrie. I wanted to be like, I don't know, Tim Russert. I mean, guys that I grew up watching or listening to, these really great journalists, these great personalities, and I always wanted to be them. But somewhere along the way, I managed to carve out my own space. And that's a really good feeling, because it means that you're not trying to emulate someone else anymore. There are people that will emulate you someday, as you know, as I've tried to emulate you so many times. Including, you know, people may forget this, but I actually did work one stride show.
That's right. You did.
It was the show where you were wrestling in the cage. And man, that was a trip, because I, you know, we had gone to Stride many, many times. I love Stride. I love Heath. I love those guys over there. Sam is a friend of mine. I mean, a lot of them are friends of mine. We all kind of work together and we love each other. But Heath asked if I could do ring announcing because you were doing that. And I said, absolutely. I did not realize, I knew the fans loved you. I did not realize how much they loved you, because from the moment I went out there to ring announce, and, you know, I'd like to think that we're friends, and I like to think that I'm friends with a lot of those guys. It did not matter. The Stride crowd ate me alive immediately. They rejected everything I offered because they only wanted Kevin Huntsberger. And that was a real eye-opening experience for me that night.
Yeah, well, that was a fun night, and I appreciate you coming over and being there. And I think Dalton and Asa came as well. Weren't they there too?
Actually, Dalton, Asa, and Allie. And I remember that specifically because I did not know that Allie's car, one, the windows did not roll down.
Oh, no.
And two, she did not have air conditioning. So I had already changed into my suit. And as you know, the drive from, you know, Missouri, where we live, to Illinois is about an hour plus, depending on where the show was, I forget. I'm sweating immediately. Like, I remember getting so irritated with her, and I think I actually upset her that night because I just complained constantly. I was so hot, and I could only take off so much clothing in that car. It was a miserable experience. And then I get there, and I'm like, okay, I'm here. I can visit my friends backstage at Stride. I can kind of get my foot in the door. Maybe I could do some stuff in the future with you guys. I'll try to impress. And then I go out there, and they just ate me alive and tore me apart. And I thought, well, I want to go back to Missouri where people like me.
Well, they'll like you over here in Stride as well. And hopefully, like I said, 2021, we're able to do shows more regularly and do things more freely and whatnot. But as we kind of wind things down, Shannon, where are you looking beyond 2021? Is the wrestling, you know, is it something that you want to continue outside of CCW, or, you know, are you're doing a great job with the podcast and building that brand and whatnot? What do you see yourself doing down the road here?
I honestly do not see myself in wrestling past 2021. I also don't see myself doing Podzilla past 2021, and not because I don't enjoy doing them, but that's just not what I wanted to do. You know, I'm a writer. My dream was always to write movies, and I've got a couple that I've always wanted to work on, and that's always been my passion. That's what I wanted to do, but I found success with the podcast, and I found success with wrestling, and I wanted to continue to do it because I'm decent at it. But, you know, it's still 2020, isn't it? Earlier this year, I was actually ready to leave wrestling. I had already put my notice in with Jason that I was leaving in February. the Super Show was going to be my last show because, you know, between the podcast and wrestling and work, I have a pretty full schedule. I don't have a lot of free time. And, you know, Allie and I, we were together at the time. We both decided that we wanted to take a break from all of the extra stuff because we barely got to spend any time together. Mm-hmm. The time we spent together was always in wrestling or the podcast. You know, we never had any personal time together. So we had both agreed. We were driving back from the February show. We had just done the one with Rhino. And Rhino, by the way, super cool as well. One of my favorite guys. Very, very nice. But on the way back, we agreed, okay, I kind of want to quit. And she said she wanted to quit as well. And we wanted to spend more time together. So I told Jason, hey, you know, Super Show is my last show. I wanted to devote more time to my other interests and my relationship. Unfortunately, the relationship ended in March. And that kind of put me in a position of, okay, well, now what do I do? Do I continue the plan and go do these other things that I wanted to do? Or do I stick with what I'm good at? And it was in that moment. I said this at one of the CCW shows when I did my sort of face turn that I didn't realize how much I needed this until recently. And that was absolutely true. I didn't realize how much I needed the atmosphere and the fans and the guys backstage and, you know, my friends that I've made through professional wrestling. I didn't realize how much I needed that until I was at my lowest point. Mm-hmm. And I realized what a beautiful, loving community this is, this can be. So I really leaned heavy on it, but now I'm in a position where I'm much better off. I'm in a great place mentally as much as I can be. Emotionally, I'm pretty good. I started a new relationship a little while ago. That's going pretty well. And I don't feel as down and I don't feel as hopeless as I did when all of that went down. Cause that was devastating to me. Sure. That was absolutely devastating.
Absolutely.
To me and her. And I don't want to like downplay it as in, you know, it didn't mean anything to her. It 100% did. And she's a great person and I have nothing bad to say about her. But it did take a toll on me, and now that I'm in a better place, I don't know. I don't know if I want to keep doing wrestling. I love doing behind the scenes stuff. I love performing. I love the fans, but I'm 38, and I keep telling myself, you're not getting any younger. If you really want to make an effort at, you know, writing stories, if you really want to make films, then you need to do it. And I don't have a lot of time to devote to it because I'm still doing the podcast. I'm mm-hmm. still doing wrestling. So I don't know. I would love to do all of it, but unfortunately I can only stretch myself so thin. And I'm just now building the spirit back to really invest myself into these things. I've been half-assing it for a couple of months and, you know, kind of feel like I'm in limbo and I'm still waiting to jump back out and be really good at one thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Right now I'm just kind of drifting in the wind, seeing where it takes me at the moment. And I have no idea what 2021 holds because I didn't think 2020 was going to be like this. So
yeah.
let's just say my plans for past 2021 is to just be alive.
Well, that I appreciate the honesty of that answer, Shannon. And I hope that, you know, everything continues to go well with the podcast and with Cape Championship Wrestling. As we mentioned, you can check out Podzilla 1985 on Facebook, and you can connect with Shannon, I'm sure, via various sources of social media as well.
Well, not anymore. right now, at least not, because there's this thing with AEW and a certain producer that you've probably heard the story, who made some accusations about bullying, and he happens to be somebody that I know. And the moment that he came out and started saying these things, the first thing that the community did was start pulling old tweets that he had done. And
I thought
to myself, you know, Shannon also said some really stupid things when he was younger, never anything racist or anything like that.
Right.
Thank
right.
God. But I also made some edgy jokes that weren't funny. But at the time, I thought, well, this will get me attention. So I shut my Facebook and my Twitter down temporarily until that guy gets out of the hot water. And then
gotcha.
Maybe I'll come back. But
gotcha.
You can still find me on Instagram.
There you
least.
Go. All right. Well, Shannon, I thank you very much for being a part of the show this week. And I'm glad that we finally were able to make this happen.
I am too. This was a lot of fun. I wanted to do this show for a long, long time. I need to find the picture of you and I and stare at it lovingly for a little while. And also find that picture where we're each holding our respective company's belts and maybe the fans one day will get that match.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Hotsberger versus Shane Young.
I forgot about that picture, yeah. I remember the one where I came over and saw you at the gaming grounds, but I forgot about the championship picture. So, yes, we will have to make that happen, and I wish you all the best, and have a great rest of 2020, man.
Thank you. You too as well. I wish nothing but goodwill and luck to you guys over there at Stride. Can't wait to see you guys once again. Your show was fantastic. You were fantastic. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Shannon. Friends, thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.